Kutsudis, watching the down-jump transition, barely restrained a triumphant whistle. The others had told him, but he had not quite believed that any of this would work, that Harris Serrano could find them before Lavati took them over the border into certain captivity and probable death. But the ship's beacon broadcast her identity loud and clear, the RSS Indefatigable. Shields up, he was glad to see. Weapons hot. Well, they were all running with weapons hot these days. They'd come out of jump a mere 10 light minutes away. The scan clutter cleared quickly. He pressed the button that signaled the others that Harris had arrived.
Sir, that's a fleet ship, a cruiser, Indefatigable. She's running like we are, shields up.
Lavati came up behind him.
Damn, how close?
10 light minutes, sir, on insertion. It was a messy down jump. I'm sure there's something wrong with the FTL drive.
How long before her scan clears?
Well, considering that flutter in the drive, there may be a flux refraction for longer than usual. I'd say minimum of 3 minutes, maybe 4. Not more than 5.
Can we jump out before she's clear?
Not with the course combination, sir.
Why do you think that ship's in this system?
One of the engineering officers down the row looked over.
Unstable FTL drive. Stebbin, if you'll port those scans over, I can check in, but I'd say that much flutter could yank even a cruiser out of FTL space.
I'd like to believe that. But tell me, Kutsudis, do you know who's commanding that ship?
I can look it up.
Commander Serrano, isn't it? It was Whiston's ship, but she was closer when the mutiny started.
I cannot believe that Commander Serrano would permit her ship to have such a badly tuned FTL drive.
Could have been damaged in combat.
I don't think so. I think Commander Serrano came here for the same reason we did. As to how she knew...
His gaze swept the bridge. No one said anything.
I'll be in my office. I expect a message shortly. Pipe it there.
Esme Suiza had another of those swooping moments of doubt that had afflicted her off and on with Commodore Lavati.
Could he really be under secret orders? Or is his claim as false as mine?
Ships did sometimes cross the border on secret errands both ways. The Benignity did have defectors. She'd met one. And Lavati's anger seemed so genuine, so straightforward. No tinge of guilt, just the natural annoyance of a commander whose subordinate has screwed up yet again. Against that, she had only the tight beam message from Oblo and her own gut feeling that something was wrong, something false about Lavati that had not been wrong before. She was out on a very long, slender limb, far away from anyone who could advise her or help, and the ship coming in might be the enemy. Her scan officer looked up.
It's a fleet ship, a cruiser by the mass. There's the beacon data. Indefatigable, Captain.
Esme felt a rush of relief. Harris Serrano was here. Now everything would be all right. She had no idea how Harris would convince Commodore Lavati not to bolt if he was planning to bolt, but she was sure the worst was over.
Lieutenant, I'm ordering you to cover our jump. Don't let that traitor follow us.
Esme's initial relief was short-lived. Lavati countered it with another complication.
Traitor, sir? My scan tells me that's Indefatigable, and Harris Serrano.
Lieutenant, there's no time. I have to go now before she compromises my mission. And you might want to consider how she knew to come here.
Because I told her.
Vigilance is lit. She's targeting us and Indy.
Rascal Screens wouldn't take a direct hit from Vigilance, not this close. She could micro-jump to a safe distance, but then Lavati could jump out before Serrano was close enough. Petrus, off watch, had just told himself for the 40th time that he must get some sleep. His comm buzzed with the signal that meant Kutsudis had detected Harris's ship. He rolled out of his bunk and buzzed Oblo and Mahari with the same signal. His clothes, his boots, a dash to the head. His face in the mirror looked strange, a mask of intense concentration. Troop deck was going to be the hardest to organize. More people, and more of them not in on the secret. If Lavati did the right thing and surrendered, they'd all be all right. But chances were he wouldn't. He'd try to bargain. He'd try to blackmail Harris with her crew. And it wouldn't work. Petrus knew the depths of her heart as well as his own. She would not let anyone deliver her ship and her crew, especially her crew, into enemy hands. She would kill them herself first. Petrus had conferred with the most combat-experienced personnel he dared trust, and they had devised a plan which might, just might, save most of the crew not directly impacted by a weapon. Unfortunately, it required the collusion of at least 100 of the crew. Vigilance's full array of shuttles, 6 troop carriers, the Admiral's shuttle, the Captain's shuttle, the supply shuttle, could hold 541 if they stuffed people in standing up and hold 6 hours of life support for that many. But launching shuttles without the Captain's knowledge was, and was intended to be, well nigh impossible.
How long do we have? How long will they talk up there before something happens?
On the bridge of Vigilance, the junior weapons tech had targeted Rascal as ordered. His finger hovered over the launch buttons. Arkady Janisse glanced at the weapons officer, who looked distinctly unhappy.
Don't do that. It's too close. We need to change the options if she stays that close.
He looked to the officer.
We have the solution, sir, but it'll require changing out the fusing options. Permission to contact launch crew?
Granted.
The officer's glance shifted toward the bridge entrance.
I mean, that will take several minutes, won't it?
Yes, sir, it will.
Arkady had already signaled Mahari and told her which launch crew to descend on. Now he spoke into his headset.
Launch 4, our target is within delay radius, RSS Rascal. Change out the timing and fusing options for a close-in target.
What? We're firing on a fleet ship? That's no mutineer. Rascal's part of our escort. I'm not gonna do that.
Arkady, what's going on?
Labadi's told us to target Suiza and Serrano. Pass the word.
What about the bridge officers?
So far, they're sticking with him. But it's iffy.
Idiots.
Arkady glanced again at his officer, then at the bridge officer, who looked equally uncomfortable. His lips moved. He must be talking to Labadi. The man's face seemed to settle into a mask of sadness. Then he turned and looked at Arkady.
Janisse, Commodore wants to see you in his office. You Tubuses one could suit us. Piper call for Mahari, Ken Bernard, Guar.
The list included all of Harris Serrano's old crew. Arkady felt cold. Whatever Labadi was up to, it could not be good.
He wants to ask you some questions about your former commander. He's concerned about her motives.
Not good at all.
Arkady got up slowly under the eye of his supervisor and dared not look at Oblo or Kutsudis. Surely Mahari and Petrus and the others would have more sense than to come. Issy Guar looked at Mahari.
Does that sound like good news to you?
No. Don't you go. I will. If the bastard's looking for hostages, he doesn't need all of us. Keep working on the plan. Get him into the shuttles as soon as you can.
Mahari headed up the ladders, tapping her tagger so Petrus could find her. They met a deck below command.
He's figured it out.
Afraid so. Or something. I told Izzy not to come. Do you think we can take him?
Not if he's got ship security in there with him. And I imagine he would. Or his own weapons, for that matter. Methlin, go back down and get on one of those shuttles.
I'm not going to be the one to tell our captain that you're dead. And my baby brother will think I'm a wuss.
I doubt that. And I'm not willing to tell your baby brother that I ran out and let you die.
This is ridiculous. While we hang around here, he's getting Oblo and Arkady and Stepan.
So let's not waste time.
Mahari started up the last ladder. Petrus grabbed her by the shoulder. He narrowly ducked the blow she aimed at him.
I can order you.
Fine. Pull rank. I'm not leaving my friends in that bastard's hands any more than you are. Now come on.
When they got to command deck, they saw Oblo, Arkady, and Esteban sauntering down the passage from the bridge at a pace that could only be considered glacial.
Now what? Do we tackle him or...
You get out. I'll go in alone.
Harris will love that.
Look, you go to the bridge and start trouble. We need to be sure that this ship does not fire on any other and doesn't jump. While you're causing trouble, Arkady will take down the weapons. If they aren't lit, Harris is less likely to blow us all away.
If we can do that, why do you want us to evacuate the ship?
Petrus had thought of it only on that last dash up the ladder.
The captain's thumb.
For a moment, they all stared blankly.
He wouldn't.
He would if he's feeling trapped enough. Now get out. Any minute he'll be out here in the passage looking for us.
When they were out of sight, Petrus marched smartly up to the hatch of the Admiral's command section. Not at all to his surprise, Admiral Labadi held a very lethal weapon, and nothing in his demeanor suggested any reluctance to use it. Moreover, the protective cover of his command console was open, and the large red button of the ship's self-destruct was clearly visible. Around him, the duplicates of the bridge displays gave him access to the same information as bridge crew.
If you hadn't meddled, you would have been all right. They'd have repatriated you, they promised me.
Petrus felt no fear for himself. As if a story tape were running in his head, he could see the tiny figures racing through the corridors, then stopping to argue, filling the shuttles in the shuttle bay, stuffing them.
And you believed them?
They've always kept their word to me. I wouldn't have done anything that would hurt you. You most of all, Harris's old crew. You're good people.
So let us go. Let the crew go.
I can't do that. I can't fly the ship alone.
She won't let you take the ship. She'll blow it.
I hope not. I trust not. I'm sure, though, you told the others not to come.
Right.
I could have security bring them in, assuming you haven't suborned ship security, too. I suspect you've done something to interfere with my attacking Serrano and Suiza.
I believe so, yes.
Such a waste. You realize I can kill everyone.
Petrus wasn't about to tell him that the crew were even now boarding shuttles to leave. He waited as Levati, still holding the weapon on him, leaned back in his chair.
You don't want to kill everyone, Admiral.
No, but I may have no choice. Sit down.
Petrus hesitated. Sitting down took away any chance of a swift lunge, but every second he could keep Levati occupied might save another life. He sat gingerly on the edge of one of the chairs.
Tell me, what was she like?
Excuse me?
Harris Serrano, in bed. What was she like?
I'm not going to talk about that.
Why not? We both loved her. You perhaps love her still. She never favored me with the delights of her body, but you... You she raised from enlisted to a commission just for her pleasure.
Not just that.
Oh, I think so. You're not really command material, you know? Nothing like her. Or me, for that matter.
I never turned traitor.
No, you didn't turn traitor. That's not the point, and you know it. You're a good, loyal man, Petrus Kenvenard. Competent at your job, but not a commander. If you had been, I wouldn't be here with control of this ship. Harris would have taken me out somehow. In your place, I'd have taken out a traitor admiral. But you dithered. You waited. You missed one opportunity after another. And now, because of you, your beloved Harris is going to have to decide between blowing us all away or letting me escape. You aren't worthy of her, Petrus. I was, but she wouldn't have me. She chose you. I suppose she felt sorry for you.
That's not true.
It is true. But I suppose she wouldn't tell you. I'm sure she did her best not to notice.
You're trying to make me angry. You want me to do something stupid.
No, I know you're not stupid. But you must realize how it feels to be me. How being refused in favor of you feels. How long were you hiding your relationship before she ran out on you?
So much was wrong with that, so many false assumptions, that Petrus could not answer them.
We had no relationship before she... before it was proper.
I'm sure. Well, perhaps not. She had her eye on you, I'm sure, from the first. And you, I suppose, worshipped the deck she walked on.
I admired her because she was an outstanding officer.
I would have said excellent, not outstanding, but a little exaggeration can be expected. From a lover. Yes. Definitely a case of hero worship masquerading as sexual passion.
It is possible to admire the one you love, Admiral. Though I don't suppose you've had that experience.
Oh, certainly. Had she returned my affections, I would have both loved and admired her. But she didn't, you see. We got as far as that hair-rumpling and kissing stage, but then she declined any more of it. Which is why I asked you. Did she strip as good as I've always thought she would? Was she as good in bed?
Petrus shouldn't do it, he knew, but he couldn't help it. Something older than military protocol and honor was acting now. And while he might be at this man's mercy, he had one thing Levati would never have.
Better. She was mine, and you can't even begin to imagine how good it was.
Excellent. Then I think you are indeed the best leverage I could have. She can let me go, or she can watch you die.
Lavati's free hand came up with another weapon. This one was loaded with tranquilizer darts.
What is going on over there?
Their targeting's gone. Their weapons? They're standing down, Captain.
Is it a trick?
They do have Kutsudas, but he's on our side. He's been covering Rascal. He's the only one I know who could possibly fox our scan of their arming status.
Tight beam from Rascal.
Put it on.
Captain Suiza here. Our scans show Vigilance is no longer targeting us, and their weapons are down.
We confirm. Any communication from Vigilance?
No, sir. But wait. We have something. Shuttle bay.
Harris watched the change on her own scan screens.
Got it. Confirm shuttle bay opening.
Shuttle emerging, Indy. Our scan shows troop shuttle mass. Wait, we're getting a signal.
Tight beam, General.
Harris waved at her own comm crew, who shook their heads.
Tight beam, sir. I'll relay.
Rascal, Captain Suiza, hold your fire. Evacuating the ship. Commodore Levati's trying to defect.
Evacuating the ship? They can't get them all off.
Permission to dock shuttle and offload troops?
Put out a tube. Tell them to go straight out. Not to wait to swim all the way if they have pea suits.
A long moment. Then Suiza came back on.
Confirm. Pea suits in this load. Tubes out. ETA, 4.2 minutes.
You cut that close, Captain Suiza. Were you planning to clog an attempt to jump?
If I had to. And it gave me a clear shot.
Yes, I see that. Carry on. When you get those personnel aboard, you should probably let Kutsudas onto scan. And if there's anyone from my old crew, I'd like to speak to them.
Yes, sir. Second shuttle emerging.
Seconds ticked by, her mind hardly needing the chronometer to sense the passage of each one. Each meter gained as the shuttles moved toward Rascal. One after another, the entire complement, like beads on a string. That ship would be most vulnerable when she opened the hatch to let them in, but Suiza had not suggested moving back to a safer distance.
I must be pleased with Suiza later.
The first shuttle positioned itself close to the end of the transfer tube and vented its internal pressure on the far side, pushing it gently against the tube. With the shuttle hatch open, the transfer tube with its rope handholds was easily accessible. One of the chiefs reached in and got the spare rope tethers, already secured to one of the tube framing members, and passed it up the length of the shuttle. Everyone took a grip. Then those nearest the hatch stepped into free fall and pulled themselves forward toward Rascal as the pilot eased the shuttle away again. The others, still inside, were shucked from the hatch by the rope they held. Kutsudas was third on the rope and up the tube. With the first two, he cycled through the lock and into Rascal. After Vigilance, it seemed cramped. He made his way to the bridge faster than he'd expected. Suiza was watching for him and welcomed him without more than a flip of the hand in return for his salute.
Over here. And Commander Serrano wants a report from one of her old crew. Who's aboard?
I'm the only one on that shuttle. Isiguar may be on the next. Arkady, Oblo, and Meharry went to the bridge to shut down weapons.
Kutsudas unfastened his pea suit and pulled a small gray box out of its inner recesses.
Just a second, sir, while I get this going.
The scan screen blanked, broke into a multicolored hash, and then reformed with far more clarity than before. Kutsudas glanced back at his new captain.
There. Captain, there's a real situation over there. The bridge officers are Levati's, but they're not in on the treachery. They believe what he's told them. Secret orders, he says. And Serrano's the traitor, or she couldn't have trailed him.
He tapped one of the controls, and the screen shifted to show a close-up of Vigilance's flank, the open shuttle bay.
They're getting edgy, though, and I'd guess since the weapons came off that our people convinced them.
So, do you think they'll arrest Commodore Levati?
No, sir. He's got the captain's thumb.
The self-destruct?
Yes, sir. At least we think he does. He's in the flag office, dual screens and everything, including the switch.
But he doesn't want to blow the ship. He wants to get to the Benignity.
Which he can't do with you sitting tight like this and Commander Serrano in a cruiser in easy striking distance. Especially not when he realizes how much of the crew we're getting off. We think he'll threaten to blow it, try to get her to let him go.
She won't.
Kutsudas looked at her. She was a long way from the exhausted, frightened young officer who had saved them at Xavier. She had the same kind of look he associated with Serrano.
Mr. Turner, let's get these new arrivals settled, somewhere out of the way.
No easy task on a patrol ship. Out of the way was an almost entirely hypothetical description. The next shuttle bellied up to the transfer tubing and repeated the unloading maneuver. The first shuttle was easing back into the shuttle bay. The third and fourth were lined up to unload. Kutsudas wondered how many personnel were waiting, how many had been convinced. Well, there was a way to find out. He tapped into the communications line and probed for Vigilance's internal communications. Oblo had promised to turn it to full power.
There.
But this is mutiny!
That was Captain Burleson.
Yes, sir, and reckless abandonment, that's right. And if we're wrong, then the Admiral will do nothing but sit there and talk to Commander Serrano. And when she's convinced, we'll all go back and be reamed out. But it's better than ending up a Benignity prisoner, don't you think?
He wouldn't!
Sir, he has. There's evidence. Thing is, we are not going to get in a fight with loyal fleet vessels, and we're not going to sit here and let the Admiral blow us away. Now you have a choice, sir, of coming along willingly. Or me and Methlin will carry you.
He's not going to come. He's a captain. He'll want to stay.
The rest of you, come on.
Kutsudas figured Suiza was right, and they'd had to knock out the stubborn flag captain. Lavati still smiled that poisonous smile as he completed the tight beam to Indefatigable.
Commander Serrano, it's too bad you came all this way for nothing.
I wouldn't exactly call it nothing.
Harris's voice steadied Petrus, but Lavati's knowing leer still hurt. Petrus could feel himself sliding into the tranquilizer's warm, dark pool. He wanted to speak, but he couldn't figure out how.
When an admiral and his ship go missing in a time of war, people notice.
All you're doing is ensuring that hundreds of innocent people die. They would have been safe but for you. They could be safe still, if you do what I tell you.
And what is that?
Let me go. Pull back, you and Suiza, and let me go. I know what I'm doing.
I don't think you do, Arash.
They're your people, Harris. People you love. People you hurt once. You want to kill them now?
I'm not killing them, Arash. You're the one who was planning to take them to their deaths.
They'd have been repatriated. Jules promised me...
Jules?
Never mind. Doesn't matter now. What matters is that your people are at your mercy, Harris. I have Petrus right here with me.
And you're going to kill him unless I let you go, and then he'll be killed by the Benignity? That won't work, Arash.
Of course it won't work. I could have told you that. Wish I could tell her. Love her.
Petrus relaxed then, and let the dark pool lap over him.
You haven't heard me out. You always did interrupt. Listen.
Arash, don't do this.
Harris felt useless. She had tried before to persuade traitors not to be traitors, and it hadn't worked then.
You won't get anywhere. You'll only be killed.
You can't stop me. At best, I'll be under suspicion the rest of my life. Why should I do that?
Because...
They had been friends. He had given her Kutsudas when she needed him. He had let her go with the prince's clones when he could have blown her away. She knew he knew that already.
I don't want that life, Harris. I don't want to live that way with all those meaningful glances.
So you're going to run off to the enemy when we need you?
You don't need me. You don't even love me.
Love you? Is that what this is about?
No. Well, not entirely. Now that I'm leaving, I'm sorry we never got together. You Serranos are special people.
The smirk on his face was infuriating. Harris wanted to wipe it off with a shovel.
We Serranos are stubborn, arrogant, and rude, Arash. You wouldn't have liked sleeping with me, even if I'd been willing. Now be serious. You always were a good officer. Think. This isn't fair to your crew.
Life isn't fair, Serrano. You of all people should know that.
Why not just kill yourself and let them go?
Why would I? Harris, look, I wasn't close to Lupescu. And I never went on his stupid hunts, but I knew about them. And that got me sucked in. They had something on me, so I...
Arash, you blew up two Benignity ships coming to my rescue. You can't seriously mean...
Harris, you are such an innocent. Why do you think I was even there, within range to hear you? If you hadn't tried to fight, and that idiot in the Benignity hadn't decided to take you out completely, you'd never have known I was there. You had something the Benignity wanted badly, and the plan was that you'd be boarded, the item removed, and then you'd be towed into a fairly lonesome sector to make your way back if you could.
You were after the Prince? You wanted the Prince?
Yes, of course, and the clones. The Benignity thought that would give leverage. I didn't want you hurt, or that old lady, actually. Her poisoning wasn't a Benignity plan. That's why they killed the poisoner.
But Arash...
It was useless. If he thought he'd have a good life with the Benignity... She squeezed her eyes shut. She had been so happy to find out that Petrus was on Lavadi's ship. She had trusted Lavadi to care for his crew as she cared for them. And now, he was taking them to certain death, one way or the other.
Why not take a shuttle? I'll let you go. You'll be safe. They'll can me, but that's happened before. And your crew will be safe. You can trust me not to fire on you.
No. I need the cruiser and its crew. That's my ticket home.
Harris could hardly believe, even now, how cold-blooded he was.
Come on, you're an admiral. They'd be glad to have you if you arrived in your underwear.
No, Harris. They would not. It is their opinion that I have not heretofore justified their investment in me. That is almost their exact phraseology. I must bring the cruiser and its crew. They don't want the crew, but they want to be sure the cruiser isn't booby-trapped.
Away from the video pickups, someone held up a board with the numbers so far evacuated on it. She looked back at Lavadi.
How about the crew, Lavadi? Did you think how they're going to react now they know you've sold them over to the Benignity? Can you really keep control of them until you get there? Do you think they'll let this ship go without a fight?
Thanks to you and Suiza, probably not. Blast it, Serrano. It's all your fault anyway.
Back to that, where he would stick until the end, she realized.
Is Petrus in your cabin with you?
Oh, yes. I couldn't trust him elsewhere. Do you want to see him?
And before she could answer, he'd turned the video pickup around. Petrus sat slumped in a chair on the other side of the desk. He had a vacant, vague expression, utterly wrong for that reckless face.
A touch of pharmaceutical quietude. He's too dangerous. And besides, I'd had my fun twitting him. He's besotted with you, you know. No, he's not up to your weight.
Her mouth had gone dry. She could not speak. Over half the crew had been taken off and stuffed like salt fish into Rascal's compartments and passages. The shuttles were even now unloading again. This load would have to make the longer traverse to Indefatigable, unless they were left dangling on the ropes trailed from Rascal's transfer tube. She knew that if she micro-jumped closer, Lavadi would press that red button under his thumb. He might anyway. Petrus was dead already. She could see no way of getting him out. Lavadi could push that button before anyone could get into the compartment, even if there had been someone to do it. All she could do was keep Lavadi talking as the slow shuttles went and came, ferrying off one meager load at a time. Maybe, maybe, Petrus would be the only innocent to die. But even as she thought this, Lavadi's gaze turned from her to one of the screens beside him that she could not see. His eyes widened. He paled.
They're running away. Evacuating. No! I will not let you win, Serrano!
And his thumb went down.
I regret to inform you, Commodore Lavadi just blew up Vigilance. Rascal was much closer than we are. They may have damage. We hope there will be survivors. We are now going to mount a search and rescue effort.
The old formula made it possible to say, but not easier.
I ask you all to remain calm and carry out your duties. When we have word on survivors, you will be informed. For the duration of the rescue, launch bays and medical are cut out of the internal communications net. If you have a medical problem, contact your unit commander, who can contact the bridge.
Captain, we've got a line back to Rascal.
Only minor damage, Captain Serrano, but we can't stuff any more in here. I do have a debris plot.
Thank you, Captain Suiza.
Any sight of those shuttles?
Hardened combat shuttles should be able to survive if not hit by anything too big. The officers' shuttles? Probably not.
Yes, sir. One at least is whole, but appears to be tumbling out of control. Haven't spotted the others. Oh, wait. Kasuda says he has them.
We're coming in, but slowly.
Shields up to avoid damage from debris, much more slowly than she wanted.
Please. Please let them be alive. More of them. Most of them. All of them, if it's possible. Please.
Harris waited a few minutes on the bridge to deal with any questions from the section commanders, but none came. So, with a last nod at her exec, she went to her office across the passage. There, she copied and sealed the scan records and began her own detailed report for Fleet, as she waited for the first reports on rescue attempts. Petrus was dead. Levati had fun with him. She could imagine what Levati had said, how Petrus must have felt. And she had come too late, with no miracles, without the chance to tell him what she felt. The hours crawled by. She acknowledged the first report of success. The tumbling shuttle found, boarded, survivors, most badly injured, stabilized as well as possible. Another shuttle, its hatch open. Had it been loading at the moment of destruction? And all aboard dead. Another, all aboard alive. Comm-mast destroyed, but the pilot had been able to guide it toward Rascal. Harris pressed the answer button, trying to concentrate on item 16F in her report.
Captain, do you want lunch in your office or down here?
Her inclination was to refuse lunch, but experience said, eat now or pay later.
Soup and bread, in my office.
5 minutes then, Skipper.
The soup tasted flat and the bread stale. She ate anyway, knowing it was important, alternating two spoonfuls of soup with a bite of bread. He was dead. He was dead forever. He hadn't even been able to hear her, see her, in the moment before he died. All he'd heard had been Levati's poisonous words. All he'd seen was Levati's arrogant face. Harris was ready for something, anything, to break the mood.
Come in.
The door opened and Methlin Mahari stood there in a rumpled pea suit.
I'm sorry, Captain. I couldn't get him out.
I know.
I should have killed that scum-sucking toad the moment I felt that twitch in my gut. It would have saved us a lot of trouble.
It's not your fault.
I know, but damn it, Captain! I know how you felt about him.
Yes, and I'm going to grieve and cry at the wake. But I was lucky to have his love, and that's what I'll remember. I'm not going to let a traitor rob me of that memory. And it's not going to ruin my life.
Harris said it to comfort Mahari, but all at once she felt better herself. It wouldn't last, she knew. The pain would come back, the loss. But that instant's memory of his laughing face in the sunlight years ago on Cerealis brought only joy. Winter rains had finally come to the main fleet base at Copper Mountain, one front after another dumping snow on the higher elevations and a cold, stinging rain lower down. Q-Town glittered in the lights of celebrating bars and restaurants and stores, streets freshly swept by another squall of rain and a bitter wind that rushed people off the street and into shelter. Inside Diamond Sims, the main room was crowded with men and women in fleet uniforms. Almost all the tables were full, with a line of people at the bar.
Just what we need, a politician horning in our celebration. The time our officers get here, we'll all be falling on the floor.
Fleet personnel in and around Copper Mountain had chosen this bar for a joint celebration. Crowded as it already was, it would get worse. Standing room only by the time they came to the toasts.
The speaker isn't just any politician.
Politicians are politicians.
It was not Oblo's first mug that stood half empty on the table at his elbow. Methlin Mahari, across from him, shook her head. Her younger brother Gellin sat beside her, newly promoted and decorated for his part in defeating the mutiny. He was still a bit stiff with her shipmates. At one end of the long bar, a group of civilians clustered around a balding older man in a ridiculous yellow leather jacket, like a costume out of a play. Oblo gestured with his mug.
Like him? What's he doing here dressed like that? Is this a costume party or a proper wig?
He saved me. He's a scientist, and he and the others stole a troop carrier from the mutineers to get the secret stuff from the weapons research lab on Stack 3. They've earned their night out.
You say so.
Who's the redhead?
Ensign Pardalt. She's another one that was on the plane that picked me up, and she was the professor's bodyguard. I heard from the rest of them that she saved his life. Besides that, she put together some kind of signaling device that put the word out about the mutiny.
She did that? Where's she from? What's her specialty?
Xavier. Got a fleet scholarship after that. She's a junior instructor here.
Waste of talent. She sounds like another Sweezy.
Prettier.
Oblo nodded to a young officer a table away.
Careful. Young Serrano won't like to hear that.
Young Serrano won't even notice. He's far too involved. She's a looker, Ensign Pardalt. And that fat old man knows it.
He's that kind, then.
No. I'd say he's using your honey to bait his trap for the people he wants to talk to. Oh, he'll flirt. But my guess is he's thoroughly attached elsewhere.
The outer door opened again, and a new group stood blinking rain out of their eyes.
Oh, there she is. Captain, over here.
Harris Serrano and Esme Sweezer, side by side, came into the room. And behind them was a phalanx of Serrano admirals, around a blonde woman in civilian dress and a redhead in uniform. Oblo gaped.
What? What?
It's Brun. Brun Meager Thornbuckle. It must be she's on the staff or something. Lady Cecilia.
But it is. And Oblo, look. Harris has her stars.
And they didn't even ask us to the ceremony?
Admiral Vita Serrano stepped forward.
We ask your courtesy. May we join you?
Certainly, sirs. You're most welcome.
That was Sim, whose hover chair had the ability to get through spaces difficult for those afoot. He cocked his head at Harris.
Are we celebrating a promotion as well?
Yes. We lost an Admiral Minor in Arash Lavadi. We decided we needed another one.
Congratulations.
Harris handed over her credit cube.
The traditional.
Right. And thank you, Admiral.
When the group moved forward into the room, Brun lagged behind. She faced the scarred man in the hover chair squarely.
You told me I had much to learn. You were right.
I heard. I was sorry I'd been so rough with you, seeing what came to you after.
No, you were right at the time, and I needed to hear it. Too bad I didn't learn sooner. Men died because of it.
Brun fished in her bag.
This is a piece of the yacht I was on when I was captured, where my father's men died defending me. Would it? Could you possibly keep it here?
I'd be honored. Do you have their names?
Yes. Here's a cube that has their names and pictures, and all for your database. They're worth remembering.
Everyone is, Sarah.
Yes. I know that now.
I believe you do. You're welcome here, Sarah. You qualify on all counts.
Thank you. I'll do my best to stay qualified.
He hefted the fragments she'd given him.
I believe you will. Now, go join your friends. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Brun edged between the crowded tables to reach the Serrano crowd, just in time to see Baron and Esme in a clinch. A pang struck her. She had never yet loved anyone like that, and she didn't know if she ever would. Lovers reunited, heroes at the top of their form. She glanced at Harris, who was not reunited with her love.
What a pair. One sight of each other and you lose all professional decorum.
Professional decorum is for ships, sir. This is a bar.
Esme, you're going to suit this family just fine.
Esme, I'm so sorry I caused you all that trouble. Old admirals should never be annoyed and then bored. They cause problems.
About the history.
That's for historians. There's a time to give up the question of who's to blame and get on to what we're going to do now. In my view, what we do now is give you and Baron a proper wedding with a reception where we, your family and ours, and as many friends as we can pack together, can all eat and drink and tell stories.
You didn't mean now.
No, your family isn't here. This is just Harris's promotion party. First, she feeds us, then she gets us drunk.
If I can, if the credit holds out.
Consider it a rehearsal. Gives you some idea how it's going to be for your family to host the reception.
Not a problem, if you'll come to Altiplano. We're good at feasts, and we have plenty of room.
You picked a brave one, Baron.
I know, but that's not the only reason.
Esme turned red.
But it's one reason. They're impossible, Esme. They're determined to embarrass us.
Blushes won't kill me. I'm not going to run from them.
Good. Have I told you how proud I am of you? Catching Levati like that?
I didn't do it alone.
No, Esme, don't start that. Of course you didn't go paddling after him bare naked and alone through interstellar space. But you listened. You understood. You took action.
I had to.
Yes. That's why I love you. You do the hard things you have to, always. I can trust you for it.
She hugged him again.
You. I heard about you, too. I was so worried.
I was scared. Then, I was too busy to be scared.
He wasn't scared or jealous, either one, he realized. He glanced over to the bar, caught the professor's eye, and nodded. Cecilia had not hesitated. Whatever the others might think, she had no concern about being unwelcome. She didn't know all the Serranos, but she knew Oblo and Mahari. She made her way to their table. Oblo heaved himself up, moved the line of people to his right with a glare, then moved his chair and offered it to her. He crouched beside her in the space he'd made.
Lady Cecilia, ma'am, what are you doing wearing a fleet uniform with stars on? You can't make me believe they made you an admiral.
Not exactly. Remember back on Xavier, when that young lieutenant on Sweet Delight thought I must be an officer in covert ops?
Yeah?
Well, Miranda and I were captured by the mutineers.
What?
Are you all right, m'lady?
I'm fine. Miranda's dead. Let me tell you...
Excuse me. May I join you?
Cecilia looked up to see Chief Jones with a mug already in hand.
Of course! You can help me tell this. You know Oblo Vicissuan, don't you? And Methlin Mahari?
I've heard. Harris Serrano's crew, right? And you survived a takeaway with that Levati Admiral Minor.
That's right. You helped out Lady Cecilia, did you?
She broke us out of the brig. Go on, tell them. That fits your story.
The whole table leaned forward, straining to hear. Cecilia regaled them with a description of how she and Miranda had overpowered the two guards with mops, scrapers, and cleaning supplies, and was gratified to see astonished and admiring looks on the faces of the two seasoned warriors.
Then the two of them dragged the dead man back to use his finger on the lock to get us out.
So how'd you get off the ship? Boner Tighe, where'd they put the brig on that model? Didn't it still have the old combat control center mucking up the design?
Right. What we did was break into the damage control lockers and start improvising.
Cecilia admired Jones's gift for storytelling. She knew just how to set the story up. It sounded better this way, in a room full of friendly people, with all the noise around them. Jones held them spellbound.
And there she was, breaking off sensor pedals and tossing them away, chanting, "They kill us? They kill us not."
And then I got tied up in Tangleweb and had to be handled like a holiday parcel.
Oblo touched the star on Cecilia's uniform.
Yeah, but the uniform. Not that I'm fussy or anything, you know me, but that's real.
That's your Harris. She needed a, bit more authority than she had, so she suggested it. Jones here coached me.
She had the command presence already, when she wanted it. All we had to do was get her to quit talking about everything in terms of horses.
It's my cover.
When did Harris get promoted? Why didn't she tell us?
As for when, about 20 minutes ago, over at the headquarters of the school. As for why no crowd, she knew you were already over here, everyone she cared about. And even for a Serrano getting her star, they can't do it in a bar. She was annoyed.
That sounds like her. She knows how it's supposed to be.
Cecilia looked at Methlin Mahari and the young man beside her.
Is that a relative of yours?
My baby brother, Gellin. He was here when it started.
He killed the carry-on.
Who?
She had taken over the prison. The one where they had me and Oblo. If he'd listened to his big sister, he wouldn't have gotten into that mess. But at least he remembered what to do about it.
Methy.
Methy, is that your nickname?
Cecilia waited for the explosion that seemed to be brewing.
Even I don't call it that.
See what you've done? Troublemaking scamp.
Methlin thumped her brother on the head. But she was grinning, the dangerous glint hiding again in those sleepy green eyes. Harris leaned over Cecilia suddenly.
Methlin, good. You found your brother. I've heard good things about you, young man. Think you might want to do ship duty again someday?
Yes, sir. I'm hoping to be assigned with Lieutenant Serrano, sir.
Oh, well, I suppose one Meharry is enough. Oblo, could you find the rest of the Vigilant survivors for me? It's time.
Right, sir.
Oblo edged his way past her.
Cecilia, we have a little tradition for new admirals. I hope you'll join in. You are, after all, a new admiral.
I knew this was going to get me in trouble.
Oh, we're in this together. Come on now.
Harris offered a hand. Cecilia struggled against the ever-thickening crowd.
I'm not senile, just old.
Good. We have to go outside.
Why? It's raining, it's cold, it's...
Tradition. Oh, and here.
She handed over a bag of something heavy.
What is this? What's going on?
If they'd done my promotion ceremony properly, we wouldn't have to go through this, but they had to rush. It's like this. You know, don't interrupt, you do know, because I'm telling you, that after a promotion, an officer owes a token to the first enlisted personnel who salutes the new rank.
Really? It sounds like the owner tipping grooms after...
Get your mind off horses, Ceci. This is serious.
It was serious if you didn't tip grooms, too. Cecilia looked at the set of Harris's jaw and said no more.
Shipboard promotions. The newly promoted get a measure of drink chits to give out. Same for each of the group being promoted. Dockside, they usually give cash tokens, even if most of the bars won't take them and would rather charge a credit cube. Anyway, admirals are supposed to do a bit more. Now, I took care of the food part, but we still have to get through the saluting part. These are tokens I had made up. Not for this, but another purpose. They'll do. How old are you, anyway?
How old am I?
You see, admirals pay by the year. You have to take and honor as many so-called first salutes as years of your age.
On which planet?
Be serious. Never cheat your people.
I don't honestly know. 80-something, maybe 90 by now.
Call it 90. Your arm's going to get tired. You do know how to salute, don't you?
This was the most ridiculous of the many ridiculous things that had happened since the trim little woman in the purple uniform had appeared on Sweet Delight to start over as a yacht captain.
No, I do not know how to salute. I am, after all, in covert ops.
Not now you aren't. You're about to get promoted and retired all in one night. Come on.
Outside, the cold rain had stopped for the moment, leaving the pavements wet.
I don't see why we can't do this inside.
Because it's a bar. Come on, it won't take long.
Everybody's inside. It will take us hours to find 90 people to salute us.
They would be wet and cold and miss the whole party. Surely that wasn't the right idea.
Come on, admirals don't loiter in doorways.
Cecilia followed her down the sidewalk. Whatever they designed admirals' uniforms for, it was not staying warm in cold, windy rain.
Where are we going?
Far enough so I can show you how to salute without embarrassing you or the others.
What others?
I can tell you're an admiral, Cecilia, because only an admiral gets to ask that many questions. Now watch.
Harris demonstrated. Cecilia tried it, and after a few repetitions, the motion seemed almost familiar. Almost.
I'll muck it up somehow.
No, you won't. It's just the same old noblesse oblige with a hand movement.
When they turned back, Cecilia could just make out a double row of figures standing in the cold rain. She shivered, not only from the cold.
From vigilance. It's their right.
At first, it felt awkward, ridiculous, like a travesty. Harris was the real admiral, the one to whom salutes should be given. She was just an old lady playing a game, trying to help out, but not really what her uniform suggested. But Oblo didn't play games. His salute steadied her. Methlin Mahari would not countenance a travesty, nor lead her brother to do so. Chief Jones was not ridiculous. Kutsudis, others from Vigilance, and then the rest of the survivors from the Bonar Tig. Cecilia felt more than rain stinging her face. She didn't deserve this, but she had to live up to it. Her arm was very tired when she handed out the last of the tokens Harris had given her, and they went back inside. The toasts were just beginning. Cecilia could not identify the protocol that determined which toast would come next, but she could tell there was one. She slipped an Antox pill under her tongue. At least she wouldn't have to suffer the consequences of what looked to be a very long night. The tables were packed now, so she edged toward the bar, where the man in the yellow jacket still held his place. Oblo and Mahari moved up beside her.
How long are we going to have to wait for the politician?
Politician?
They said we'd have to wait. He wants to make a speech. The speaker.
We don't have to wait. The politician's already here.
Who? It's got to be a civilian, right? You're not telling me that fat guy in yellow is the new speaker. Oh, Methlin's brother says he's a scientist.
No, she's not a scientist.
Oblo glared at her. Mahari grinned.
Well, who then?
Look around.
Cecilia nodded toward the table full of Serranos, where Esme was snugged up against Baron, and Brun was talking earnestly to Vida.
Not her? Brun? That fluffhead?
She's not a fluffhead now, Oblo.
Cecilia watched as Vida stood up and waited while the room quieted.
I have the honor of introducing the Speaker of the Grand Council, who came here from Castle Rock to speak to us.
Brun stood, looked around the packed room, then spoke to someone near her. One Serrano cleared that end of the table for her to stand on and helped her up. She stood there and let them all look.
I have a personal reason to thank you. When I was a young idiot and got myself into trouble, you came and got me out. Some have argued that it was wrong, that my father should not have asked you to risk yourselves for me. Some have even said it caused the recent mutiny, that it was this misuse of power which drove some of you, some of your former comrades, to break away. But I'm very glad you did it. The regular space service, since its inception, has been our protection against enemies foreign and domestic. You've had the most difficult of missions over the centuries, trying to be military and police at the same time, staving off full-scale invasions and handling things like stolen ships and piracy. And you have done it well. Most recently, you've managed to save us from the depredations of your own gone bad. You've had to make hard judgments. You've had to fire on old friends who broke their oath to you. You've done that all well, and your performance is beyond praise. Traditionally, the government would authorize a medal for you, and it will. But what is a medal compared to what you have been through these last few years? We are going to do something else. You'll have heard rumors about the changes in the Grand Council. I'm here to tell you some facts. The younger members of the great families, the founders, have agreed to cooperate. For how long, no one knows. That's why I'm Speaker. We are opening the Council to elected representatives of groups other than the families. We're particularly concerned to open up opportunities for young people, to keep rejuvenation technology from being a permanent ceiling under which the rest of us are squashed. And before you accuse me of the worst kind of hypocrisy, there is something you should know. I have sworn not to rejuve, and if I break that oath, I will be removed from all power, both in the Grand Council and in my sept. Now, there's a lot more I could say, and I will be here for several days talking to a lot of you, but this isn't the time for long political speeches. This celebration isn't about me or the new blood on the Grand Council. This is about you, what you did, and what it cost you. This is the time to say thank you from everyone you served. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We can't replace what you have lost. We can only offer you our admiration and our gratitude.
Brunn reached down, and one of the admirals handed her a glass.
To fleet!
To fleet!
She started to climb down. Oblo raised his mug.
To Brunn!
To Brunn!
After that, an uneasy silence fell. Cecilia wondered if they were waiting for the civilian guests to make a toast. Harris Serrano held her glass high.
Absent friends.
Absent friends!
Davis Brelver.
Ryan Merriweather.
Tracy Kellerwitz.
Mars Cassidy. Lewis
A gust of icy wind blew in as a group in uniform threw open the doors. Cecilia squinted past the lights. She didn't recognize any of them. She turned to Oblo. Who's that?
Levadis. Lots and lots of Levadis.
Levadi? But wasn't that the one who...
Yeah.
Cecilia could feel Oblo's tension, and she glanced at the table full of Serrano officers. They, too, had seen the Levadis.
Admiral Serrano.
The man in front of the group had, Cecilia noticed, stars on his shoulders. More than any of the others.
Which Admiral Serrano?
All the Admirals Serrano stood up, and Cecilia was suddenly reminded of the confrontation scene in a bad historical drama. Two rival gangs facing each other down. Sabato Serrano moved as if to speak, but Harris put out her hand.
We are sorry for your loss.
You... We came to apologize to you for what he did.
I named him as an absent friend.
Is it too late to sing him home?
It is never too late to honor the good in a man's life or grieve his loss.
She nodded to the other Serranos.
This for the friends we had of old. Friends for a lifetime's love and cheer. This for the friends who come no more, who cannot be among us here. We'll not forget while we're alive these hallowed days.
The Serrano Legacy, Against the Odds, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1998, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Sonny Lasky, Elizabeth Demery, Ren Casey, David Coyne, Thomas Penny, Colleen Delaney, Peter Stray, Jeff Baker, Andy Clements, Ken Jackson, Mort Shelby, Terrence Hazelford, Richard Rowan, Michael John Casey, Michael Glenn, Tim Getman, Margie Tompros, Nathan Bennett, Jonathan Watkins, Lily Beacon, Stephen Carpenter, Eric Messner, Dylan Lynch, Jason Stiles, Scott McCormick, Tom Simpson, Joe Brack, Casey Platt, Christopher Graybill, and Kate Foster. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Temeskin Wubna. Graphic audio sound design by Temeskin Wubna and Chris Rowan. book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. If you enjoyed The Serrano Legacy, be sure to look for Rogue Angel, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Anya Creed.
What can I do for you?
We need you to go to Antarctica.
Why?
It's classified.
This is getting ridiculous. Okay, pal. Just what in the hell have you got me mixed up in here?
I found something amazing. This.
This is incredible.
According to the carbon dating we did, it's over 10,000 years old.
There's no way humans could have made this 10,000 years ago. You're not implying extraterrestrial?
Why not?
Where in the world did you ever find that?
I'm on a dig at the base of Horlick Mountain.
So when do we leave for the dig site?
Tomorrow morning, first thing.
So, you're our newest addition here.
I guess so.
Welcome. My name is Colonel Thompson. I'm in charge of the operation here at Horlick. Allow me to introduce you to Major Braden.
What the hell are you doing here?
You're in trouble, sweetheart.
You bastard. You sold me out.
The time to come clean is now, Miss Creed. Major Braden, you have something for me?
Yes, sir.
You took my laptop, so what? Go ahead and open it.
Any last words?
Boom?
Too late for that, my dear.
Oh, Anya?
You've got to pull it together. There's a bomb rigged to explode in less than 30 minutes. It's going to bring down the entire mountain on top of us unless we can get it deactivated.
This is not a drill. We need to evacuate the camp. Move, people!
I'm staying to help Hawk and his team.
You could die.
Maybe.
I'll never forgive myself if you die.
I've got to go.
Rogue Angel 16. Polar Quest. From Graphic Audio. If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net.